From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, you're all invited to my birthday bash and open lines. And at the end of the program, a special tribute to Coast guest Timothy Green Beckley, who just passed away. It's a very sad story. Here's what's happening. The madness continues. A passenger on a Delta flight from Los Angeles to Nashville tried to breach the cockpit and hijack the plane. Delta Flight 386 crew members tackled him, zip-tied the man before anyone was harmed. They landed in Albuquerque, where the man was taken off the plane, arrested by police. California Governor Gavin Newsom will not lift the state of emergency in California on June 15th, as he had promised. California has been under a state of emergency since March of 2020. Since then, Newsom has issued some 47 executive orders to alter or suspend 200 state laws and regulations because of the virus, according to a resolution from state Republicans. But he says, look, we're still in a state of emergency. This disease is still in effect. It is not taking the summer off. A lot of people in the Los Angeles area and California not too happy with that. In a Senate hearing last month, top doctor Anthony Fauci told lawmakers the United States granted $600,000 in funding to the Wuhan Institute of Virology over a five-year period. But documents provided by the Department of Health and Human Services show the actual number was higher, $826,000. Well, how about that? State Department leaders, by the way, were warned not to pursue an investigation into the origins of the COVID-19. The former department officials confirmed this amid fears that it would bring attention to the U.S. funding of research at the Wuhan Institute, where the virus may have escaped. Let's check in with our expert, myheartbook.com's Christian Wild. Christian, there's something very strange about this whole story. You know my gut feelings, and there's something weird here.
George, I do know your gut feelings, because I can remember the time you shared your belief that this virus probably did not come from an animal, but would more likely, as time went on, be proven to come from that Wuhan lab.
Yep.
A lab, you know, where viruses like coronavirus were being tested every single day, and it made sense that it would come from that lab. So you weren't alone, George, and even the president and other state officials at that time shared your opinion, an opinion, incidentally, that was dismissed by many in the media and scientific community as being conspiratorial. Now, the Chinese have stonewalled a World Health Organization investigation into the origin of the virus. And, George, that was even after reports that multiple employees of the lab had been hospitalized after becoming seriously ill in November, way back in 2019. And that was really at the beginning of this virus. Now, almost 2 years later, there's this renewed interest in a deeper investigation. George, is it too late? Can we believe that the evidence that's been preserved or has been preserved, particularly if it's not favorable to the Chinese government? The question is, if we proved it was a deliberate attack, what would be our options? What punishment would fit the crime for these millions of deaths?
Oh, absolutely. It's horrible.
George,
go ahead.
Permit me. Here's an out-of-the-box theory for your listeners. Pardon me. Supposing the Chinese military announced tomorrow that they had identified an individual who admitted to deliberately having caused this COVID leak, but that the military had executed him 2 days ago. Where would we go from there?
Oh, my God. Is this a Christian Wild theory, or do you have some information
here? Yeah, it's a wild, out-of-the-box theory of what's available to them.
That's a wild story, as we would say.
It is.
Christian, keep in touch. I understand you're going to be a special guest in a couple weeks on the program talking about some issues as well. But, you know, why doesn't Fauci come clean? I mean, what are we giving money to this Wuhan viral lab for? What are they doing? Facebook has suspended former U.S. President Donald Trump until at least January of 2023. and announced changes to how it will treat world leaders who break the rules on its site. Facebook had suspended Mr. Trump's account the day after that deadly January 6th Capitol Hill riot, determining that he had incited the violence. The suspension will last at least 2 years from the date of the initial block and would only be lifted if the risk to public safety has receded. Former President Trump criticized that decision as a form of censorship and an insult to his voters. Did you know that puppies are born with human-like social skills wired to communicate with people instantly? That's right. And they basically say that 40% of the variation in puppies' abilities to follow a human's finger pointing is simply due to their inherited genes. That's kind of neat, isn't it? Well, the story we broke yesterday on Coast to Coast, whatever, whoever they are, they're still out there. But U.S. intelligence is after them still, but its upcoming report will not deliver any full or partial truths about UFOs. Instead, it will yield a more mundane reality that is not likely to change many minds on any side of the issue. Investigators have found no evidence that the sightings are linked to aliens, but can't deny a link either. The two officials who briefed on the report due to Congress later this month say the U.S. government cannot give a definitive explanation of aerial phenomena spotted by military pilots. The report also doesn't rule out that the pilots may have seen new technologies developed by other countries. One of the officials said there's no indication the unexplained phenomena are from secret U.S. programs. In a moment, Kevin Randall will join us as our special two-hour guest with his latest book, UFOs in the Deep State. But first, here's his weekly UFO report. Kevin, what do you have for us?
Well, good evening, George, and happy birthday.
Thank you, and happy birthday to you, too.
Well, thank you. I can always remember your birthday because it's the anniversary of the Battle of Midway.
That's right.
I thought I'd
absolutely right.
For no reason good, whatsoever.
Good tidbit.
I have updated this report a half a dozen times in the last 24 hours, and you've kind of stepped on my toes here a little bit. I will note that we have reached June, and the report about the what we now call UAPs rather than UFOs is due to Congress, allegedly arriving on June 25th, which is the anniversary of the Custer disaster at the Little Bighorn. We've heard a lot about this since the mandate was passed as part of a COVID-19 relief package last year. I will also note that this was supposed to be an unclassified report about these UAPs, but there was a discussion about a classified appendix to it, which we, outside the Congress, will not see. We have heard from the former Director of National Intelligence, that's the DNI, John Radcliffe, that the government has a lot more sightings of the UAPs. Importantly, he said, quote, "When we talk about sightings, we are talking about objects that have been seen by Navy and Air Force pilots, as we all know, and have been picked up by satellite imagery," which I think is an important point. And that, frankly, these actions are difficult to explain traveling at speeds in the exceed the sound barrier without a sonic boom. I need to point out that we can look at the long history of UFO sightings and we see the same observations made decades ago. Ed Ruppelt, one-time chief of Project Blue Book, tried to determine how UFOs could exceed the sound barrier without a sonic boom. These more recent video recordings of UFO sightings have spurred a renewed interest in the UFOs and is the cause of the congressional interest. While it all sounds good on paper, I have been hearing some disturbing things about the report. There are rumors that it may be delayed because a 180-day time frame did not allow for the collection of the data from various government agencies. Just last Tuesday, questions about the timing were directed at the Pentagon Press Secretary, John Kirby, who said the report was coming from the DNI and that the release of the congressionally mandated study was up to him. He refused to respond to an inquiry that they, in the Pentagon, have ruled out, as you mentioned, possible life forms out there, meaning beyond Earth. That rumor does persist, and according to some leaked information, which you've talked about here, they didn't find aliens, and I'm not surprised. One of the things that hasn't been noticed in all this is that the renewed interest in these new reports and these new investigations negates at least two of the conclusions drawn by the Condon Committee report in 1969. This tells us that there are national security aspects to the UFO-UAP sightings, even if they are not alien, and there is something of value to be learned by studying the reports. Given that, maybe we can retire that tired suggestion that science looked at the UFO sightings and determined there was nothing to worry about in them. Seems that there is, given what we know. Lou Elizondo, who sparked some of the interest when he leaked the Tic Tac footage just last week, filed an inspector general complaint against what he said was a DOD disinformation campaign against him for speaking out about the UFO situation. Although it seems Elizondo is interested in clearing his name, he also said he was trying to get the Pentagon to clear up what he called the ambiguity. I don't know why I can't talk here.
That's happened to me once in a while, too, Kim.
about UFOs, and there are different groups that are responsible for responding to this particular phenomenon. They're not briefing each other about this. What that does is play into the trouble with the required report, gathering the information from the various organizations that control it, and writing a report for Congress that is supposed to be unclassified. None of this bodes well for the disclosure of UFO information, but it does. But that has been the problem for decades. Those in charge simply don't want the information disseminated to the general public. And I have an expanded version of this on my blog for them that want to pick up a little bit additional information. And that's it for the report tonight, George.
All right. Well, stand by, Kevin, because we're going to come right back to you and talk about UFOs in the deep state. And then later on tonight, we'll take calls with Kevin Randall before we go into our birthday bash and open lines on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Kevin Randall with us. Let me tell you briefly a little bit more about Kevin. He's a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, served in Vietnam as a helicopter pilot and aircraft commander. In 2003, he deployed to Iraq as an intelligence officer, serving in active duty with the Army and later the Air Force. He was a member of the Iowa National Guard on his deployment into the Middle East. He retired from the National Guard in 2009. Kevin's interest in UFOs began as a teenager when he investigated a sighting while living in Colorado. His big question then was, if the object had been sharply defined or had been a ball of light, what does that mean? And from that point on, he has investigated hundreds of sightings around the country, including nearly three decades of researching the events in Roswell. His new book is called UFOs and the Deep State. And I couldn't think of a better time for this book to come out, Kevin.
It fits right in with what's going on in the country and the world, with the deep state actually controlling so much of our lives now, and we're just kind of sitting there and saying, okay, we'll wear the mask like you tell us. Well, we'll wear two masks. Well, we won't wear any masks. It's absolutely correct. It's just the perfect timing. And had I written it this year, I would have mentioned that if you look at the cabinet that President Biden has brought in, what we see is the same people who were there in the Obama administration and the Clinton administration, the same people moving around in the upper levels of this, controlling everything that we do.
When did you start writing this book?
I started it 2 years ago. I'd interviewed a fellow named, and I'm sure you know who it is, Terry Loveless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And he was talking about how the Air Force OSI had conducted an investigation into his UFO sighting, UFO abduction, saying that they had used chemical regression and hypnotic regression in their interrogation. And I wanted to do a book called UFOs and the OSI and the Deep State. And the publisher said, well, maybe you ought to look at the Deep State a little bit more heavily than that. So that kind of inspired it. So that we would have an idea of what was going on. And I learned an awful lot more about what the deep state is doing and how it is manipulating the situation and how it filters down into UFOs. You'd think that the deep state wouldn't be concerned about the UFOs, but of course they are.
Are they involved in this report we've just been talking about, where they're basically poo-pooing the idea of extraterrestrials? They haven't denied it, but they're not admitting it.
I think that we have to look at what the overall picture is. What does the deep state want, and its power? And the problem with UFOs, if they are extraterrestrial, they present a technology that is superior to ours. We cannot travel interstellar distances. We don't know how to do it. We can't really envision a way physically we can do it. There probably are something that can be done that we'll figure out in the future, but we can't do it now. And what we know is that any time a technologically superior civilization meets a technologically inferior civilization, that technologically inferior civilization ceases to exist, not necessarily through conquest, but the mere introduction of the technology changes and alters the society. And we have any number of examples of that happening here on Earth. And what the deep state want is to retain power, and by admitting that there's that technology out there, they are surrendering a part of their power.
Who is the deep state, Kevin?
I think we're looking at the people, the bureaucrats in Washington, or the bureaucrats in all countries, the people who are not in elective office, the people who are in those high positions and maintain those positions from administration to administration. They're controlling what's going on because they're going to be there long after President Biden is gone. They've been there long after the people who originally put him into those positions have been turned out of office. So we're looking at the bureaucratic levels, at the very top levels of the government. Those are part of the members of the deep state.
How long have UFO investigations on a government level been going back, even beyond Project Blue Book? Was there anything before that?
Well, Blue Book was a name change from Project Grudge, which was a name change from Project Sign. And Project Sign was the first investigation that began officially in January of 1948 after the Kenneth Arnold sighting and the summer of UFOs in 1947. There is information that a fellow named Colonel Howard McCoy, who was at the Air Materiel Command in 1947, was asked by General Twining to create an unofficial investigation of these phenomena. Howard McCoy goes back to the Foo Fighters of the Second World War. Nobody knows what the Foo Fighters were, these objects that were seen harassing, following
real small things. Weren't they small, very tiny?
Not necessarily. If you and Keith Chester will probably appreciate this, he did a book called Strange Company, and he laid this out. I was of the same impression, but there are a lot of stories of disc-shaped objects larger than balls of light following the aircraft, that sort of thing going on. There are those smaller things, as you mentioned. But when the war ended, there was an investigation going on at the highest levels of the Allied command, trying to figure out if this was some kind of a new weapon of the Axis powers. When the war ended, of course, that priority ended as well. Nobody cared what these things were. We found out it wasn't part of the Axis. They were encountering the same things, thinking it was part of the Allied power structure. But Howard McCoy was involved in the investigation. We then had the ghost rockets in Sweden in 1946. With a similar type thing, Howard McCoy was involved in that. And then we get into 1947, and there's reports coming up through the military chains of command about our guys seeing these things. And so McCoy was requested to make an unofficial investigation of these in late 1946. And, of course, after the Arnold sighting, it became an official investigation. So our investigation goes back quite a ways in the UFO history.
You devote a chapter to the Rendlesham case. How come?
Because it talks about the chemical and hypnotic regression in the treatment of our airmen who were involved in that whole experience. And that was kind of the same thing that Terry Loveless talked about, how the Air Force OSI came in. I think it was Jim Peniston told me that airplanes landed at the Bentwaters Air Base that came from Langley Air Force Base.
Oh, boy.
But it was OSI guys on it, and they went from the airplane to the OSI building on the airfield. So we can kind of link all of that together. So we've got the Air Force OSI as a participant in this, kind of keeping the information, the UFO information, suppressed in one respect.
Was it a better case than Roswell, Rendlesham?
No, I don't think it was a better case, but it is a very important case, like Roswell. The difference is Roswell presented us with the information, the technology, I think, that we have not yet figured out, which is one of the problems we have, where Rendlesham is just an interaction between them and us on the airfield. So it's a kind of a different sort of thing, but we see the military and the governmental interest in both those cases, a high level of interest.
All right, stay with us, Kevin. We're going to take a short break and come back and talk more about UFOs in the deep state. And then, of course, next hour, we'll take phone calls with you here on Coast to Coast AM. Kevin Randall with us, retired Army Lieutenant Colonel. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Kevin Randall, our special guest, UFOs in the deep state. We'll take calls with Kevin next hour here on Coast to Coast, so get ready for that. Tim Banal is our news editor of the coasttocoastam.com website, and you may know him as the host and creator of the pioneering paranormal podcast, Banal of America, as well. He's a great guy and puts some great stories up on our website. Timothy, what do you have for us?
Hey, George, good to talk to you. Happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
We got a couple of really cool stories here I know you're going to love. The first one, you may have seen this video circulating around on the local news. It popped up here in Boston on the news. California teenager, 17-year-old girl, Haley Marinico, she's being hailed as a hero because this past Monday on Memorial Day, she was at home and she heard her dogs, her family dogs outside causing a commotion, barking wildly. So she went outside to see what was going on, and she sees a massive bear atop a wall in her backyard. So, like, the fence is like a fence, like a wall.
Great video.
Swiping at the dogs. So this brave young lady, she's braver than I am, I think, she ran out right towards the bear, shoved it with all of her might, pushed the bear over off the wall into the neighbor's yard, and grabbed the dogs and scrambled back inside the house, and only had a scratch on her from the encounter with the bear.
Great
video.
It's
an amazing video.
It sure was.
Yeah, we've got that in the number two spot at the Coast to Coast AM Carousel. Now, the other story is near and dear to my heart, and I know you're going to love this one. It's going to mean a lot to you as well. Our friend, the late, great Stanton Friedman, he's set to be honored soon at a museum in Canada. The Fredericton Regional Museum in the province of New Brunswick. Folks who knew Stan, we were both really good friends with Stan. He had moved to the city of Fredericton back in the early 1980s, and it became his adopted home. And he's like an honorary Fredericton resident now. They love him there. So at the Fredericton Regional Museum, the end of the month, on June 26th, they're going to unveil Stanton Friedman is Out of This World, and it's an extensive exhibit showcasing his life and his career with a whole bunch of artifacts from his five-decade-long quest for answers regarding the UFO phenomenon. And as I said, that's going to open on June 26th. And for the folks, you know, it's not too far from me, and I was hoping to see it. Luckily, it's going to be it's going to run for the next 2 years. So hopefully any COVID restrictions will be ended sooner than later, and I'll be able to get up there and check out the exhibit at the Fredericton Regional Museum. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Good job, Tim. We'll talk to you soon. Tim Banal, our news editor of coasttocoastam.com. George Norrie back with you, along with Kevin Randall, UFOs in the Deep State. That is his book. His website blog is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's kevinrandall.blogspot.com. Kevin, back to the UFO investigations of history. What did you think of Project Blue Book?
When Blue Book started in 1952, it was changed from Project Grudge to Project Blue Book, and Ed Ruppelt was in charge of it during that transition. I think they did a very good job. I mean, they were looking for answers. They were attempting to find out what was really going on.
Were they taking it seriously?
Under Ruppelt's command, yeah. They were looking at it very seriously, I should say. Once he left, and Blue Book became kind of a dead end. If you were assigned to Project Blue Book as the officer in charge, you knew your career was pretty much over. And they got an awful lot of people in there who were anti-saucer, anti-UFO. It had nothing to do with UFOs, didn't want to have extraterrestrials. And you can see the quality of the investigations just fall apart at that point.
Which I suspect they have in there now, those kinds of anti-UFO people.
I think so, too. I think that the problem is there's been a lot of interest about UFOs, but the deep state doesn't want that information communicated to the public because, once again, it can inhibit their power, and that's what it's all about. It's about the power, retaining power, and they've got their fingers in all kinds of pies, and you'd think UFOs wouldn't be one they'd be interested in, but, of course, it's all in that whole program there. But when we look at the end of Blue Book, we can see that they didn't care. They were just doing lip service for the UFO investigations. And they went through the files, and if it if the conclusion in the case had been a possible aircraft, well, possible was removed from the conclusion. They used explanations that made no sense. Levelland, Texas, for example, we had people at multiple locations seeing a UFO close to the ground, stalling their car engines, dimming their headlights. Jeez. There's very good possibility that the sheriff's car was stalled as well, but the Blue Book file doesn't reflect that. But their conclusion was it was ball lightning. Ball lightning in 1957, when these sightings took place, was a phenomenon that science disputed. So they were using one unproven phenomenon to explain another unproven phenomenon, which is a ridiculous way to do it. The whole point was to explain UFO sightings and get the public interest away from UFOs.
When Hynek came in as the consultant to Project Blue Book, did things change?
Hynek was there at the very beginning when it was Project Sign back in 1947. And I think in 1947, at the beginning, they were worried about what was going on.
Because he became a believer.
Yes, he did. Once they realized that there was no immediate threat, the attitude changed. But Hynek was, you might say, rabidly anti-saucer. Once you get to Socorro in 1964, Hynek talking to Lonnie Zamora and looking at that case, yeah, that kind of started him changing his mind until he became convinced that there was a lot more to the UFOs and the explanation was probably extraterrestrial.
Former police officer that Lonnie is no longer with us anymore, but you're right. After Hynek had a chance to discuss that case with Zamora, he was convinced there was something to all this.
Well, the thing with the Socorro case is it's always been claimed it was a single witness case. Lonnie Zamora was a single witness. And I did a book called Encounter in the Desert, which was inspired by a conversation I had with Ben Moss, who had been doing some investigation into the Socorro case. And he said three people had called the police station prior to Lonnie Zamora's call into the station about the flying saucer. And I said, did you check the police logs and these things? And I never got an answer from him. So I started looking at the case file from Project Blue Book, and there was a report from a guy named Captain Richard Holder, who was an Army officer who happened to live in Socorro and was involved in this thing from the very beginning. And he made a report that very night, April 24th, 1964, to the Pentagon. And in that report, he said three people called the police station. So now we've got verification. But nobody tried to find those people to talk to them, which I find astonishing. And that gives you an idea of the quality of the investigation. Hynek was there. He didn't try to find it, but he was kind of held in check by the people back in Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Sergeant Moody, who was the official investigator, never tried to find the people, but he was rabidly anti-saucer and was making fun of people like Coral Lorenzen. Jim Lorenzen told a funny story about how when they got to Socorro, Moody was talking to some of the police officers with Jim Lorenzen standing there, not knowing who he was, and he mentioned something about Coral Lorenzen being a nutcase, not realizing Jim was listening to what he had to say. So you get an idea of the way they were treating those sorts of cases. Hynek wanted to stay. There was another sighting in La Madera, New Mexico, like the next night, and he wanted to go investigate that, and the Air Force said, no, you got to come back. Ruppel found himself in a similar circumstances when the sightings took place in Washington, D.C. in 1952. He happened to be in Washington on some mission, and his orders had him going back to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and he called to get him extended, and they said, no, you got to come back, even though he's the guy that should have been investigating the sightings going on in Washington, D.C. at the time.
Interesting, Dave. Now, you devote some time to the UFOs and presidents. You pick it up with Jimmy Carter. Tell me about that.
Well, the thing was, I'd heard for years and years and years that Jimmy Carter was going to release the UFO information, and he never did. And I wondered why. And this kind of relates to another thing that I've always said as well, that if I'm president and I want the UFO information, nobody can stop me. I go to my...
Well, nobody should be able to stop you.
I go to my director of Central Intelligence and says, I would like to know about the UFO information. He says, well, I'm sorry, Mr. President, it's classified too high. I can't tell you. My next response is, you're fired. Bring in your deputy. And I go down the line until I get somebody to talk about that. Well, I was talking to a guy named Dan Sheehan, so I'm a name I'm sure you know.
Yes, the attorney.
Yes. And he was commissioned by or employed by Jimmy Carter to do some investigation on UFOs. And what Sheehan told me, and it's laid out in the book, is that when Carter was president-elect, he went and visited with George H.W. Bush, who was director of Central Intelligence at the time, and they're going to discuss UFOs, and Jimmy Carter's talking to him about that. And Bush says, well, before I answer any of your questions, I'd like to remain as director of Central Intelligence. And Carter says, I'm sorry, I've got my own guy coming in. And then Carter asks him the question, and Bush says, I can't tell you. You're not cleared to know it because you're only the president-elect.
Yeah, that's right.
But then once he became the president, you have to say, well, what happened there? Sheehan tells about how he was shown some classified Project Blue Book files that aren't part of the files that we've got out there, but classified files, which I found kind of hard to believe until I was talking to Jacques Vallée just the other day, and he mentioned some classified areas of Project Blue Book as well, kind of confirmed what Sheehan was telling me. And Sheehan was saying that's where the really good stuff was, and he saw pictures of what apparently was a crashed flying saucer when he was reviewing this stuff for Jimmy Carter. I think what happened was once Jimmy Carter became president, they manipulated the situation, and the answer was, Carter goes to the DCI and says, I would like all your information on UFOs. And the DCI says, certainly, Mr. President, not a problem, but there's some other agencies involved. We'll collect the information and get a report to you about it. And the report never arrives. There's always something to keep it from arriving. And I wonder if that's what's going to happen with this report going to Congress, if there's going to be something that kind of blocks it or the information isn't going to be all that great. But I think that's what they do. And then, of course, eventually Carter was caught up in the Iran hostage crisis, and that became the important part of his administration, and he was diverted from the attention. And I think we see that going on in a lot of the presidential cabinets when they begin pressing for UFO information. Something comes up to divert their attention. With Bill Clinton, it may well have been the Monica Lewinsky scandal, and now his attention is diverted. But we look at all of that sort of thing, and it's the way they manipulate the evidence, and they don't refuse to tell the president. They say, yes, we'll get it to you, and somehow they never get it to the president.
Kevin, when President Reagan was making his speech before the United Nations, he talked about a threat from outer space to try to bring everybody together. Did he know something?
According to the information that I got, and again, I outline it in the book, he had two UFO sightings, and they talk about a possible abduction. I don't think that happened prior to him becoming president, of course, but he had a high interest in UFOs, and I think his involvement with the UFO sightings, the two UFO sightings he had, sparked his interest in it, and I think that convinced him there was something real to it, and that, I think, also sparked his discussion about the next major conflict being in outer space, and it would draw the planet together.
Now, what about Richard Nixon? You don't get it. Go into that, but did you find any information about him?
I did not go into that, but it seems that each of the presidents did have a desire to know something about that, and I believe it was Nixon who supposedly showed Jackie Gleason.
Yeah, in Homestead.
Yeah, yeah. But I didn't go in that because I couldn't confirm the information as solidly as I wanted to on that. I mean, there's some interesting things going on, and I know that Jackie Gleason's wife had mentioned that as well, and Nixon hung around with Gleason. So there's a possibility he shared some information with him, but I just didn't get the kind of confirmation I wanted for it.
Eventually, the Condon Report came out, Edward Condon, University of Colorado. And it kind of knocked everything, didn't it?
It certainly did. And I mentioned that earlier. John Greenwald and I have talked about it, this report coming out being Condon 2.0, attempt to knock everything out. But I think this new report kind of knocks Condon out of the box because Condon was saying, well, there's no national security implications. There's nothing to be learned by further study, and the Air Force did a good job. Well, now suddenly we learn that the UFO investigations have continued, that there is a national security implication, even if it is an extraterrestrial. There's some kind of national security implication, and there's something that we could learn about any number of things, both prosaic and maybe extraterrestrial. And so I think that when people say, well, you know, we had this big official scientific study, the Condon Report, and they said there was nothing to it. I think what's going on today negates that whole thing, and we can eliminate the Condon Report, which is something I haven't heard anybody talking about yet.
No, you're right. But could they really be thinking that Russia or China might have technology that could do what these Navy pilots couldn't chase?
I think that's a dodge.
Huge dodge.
I think our technology beats everybody in the world. They're trying to steal our technology. It may be that the investigators couldn't get into the secret projects. There was a report that was done in 1949 by the Navy, where the Navy asked two of their guys to investigate UFOs. And in the report, even though the guys had top secret clearances, there were some areas we couldn't get to, and that may be where the answers are hidden.
Hold on, Kevin. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk more and take phone calls next hour. Kevin Randall with us, UFOs in the Deep State.